nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and get started then. It'll be a little bit challenged. I have to stay near my laptop today, but so I'll do it from back here. So we're switching gears. We're talking about another way to solve the Boltzmann equation, or to describe carrier transport. And we'll spend three lectures on something called the balance equation approach. So let me first of all review what we've done in class so far. So we've discussed three general things. This Landauer approach to low field transport, spent quite a bit of time on that. Then we did the Boltzmann equation. And then we spent quite a bit of time, or a few weeks anyway, on carrier scattering. Those are the three main things that we've discussed in this course. And the Landauer approach, you know, it's this well-known approach based on key concepts are transmission and number of conducting channels. We can use it in ballistic transport or in diffusive transport, depending on what the transmission is. It works best when the bias is small, when F1 is about equal to F2. Otherwise, it gets difficult to compute the transmission, and there are problems with inelastic scattering. But if we're careful, we can even do it there under some cases. It leads to this quantized conductance, which is becoming important in realistic devices at room temperature these days. We can easily extend it to treat thermoelectric effects. And one thing I haven't talked very much about, in this class we're always talking about band structure and E of Ks. And sometimes we talk about graphene, which just has an interesting E of K, but it always has a band. You don't actually even need a band structure. And Professor Dada talks a bit about that. For instance, you can compute the IV characteristic of a molecule. You don't need an EK. And that's part of what makes that approach nice. Okay, then we talked about the Boltzmann equation. And the advantage of this is it does what the Landauer approach does, near equilibrium. But it's also easier to use far from equilibrium, which is what we're going to be talking about in the end of this course. The difficulty is that scattering term. That's what makes everything complicated. We talked a lot about scattering. But to solve the Boltzmann equation, we made this simple assumption that the scattering integral can be related or described by the relaxation time approximation. And then we can get analytical answers that look much like the ones that we get from the Landauer approach. Right? We can only really justify that near equilibrium. And we can only really justify it if the scattering has some specific characteristics, isotropic or elastic. Okay. But it has some advantages. When we come to B fields, it's easier to treat B fields in the Boltzmann equation than it is to figure out how to do it in the Landauer approach. When we have anisotropic transport and we get transport tensors, it's more direct and easier to do it in the Landauer approach. And then we talked about scattering. So we talked about this collision operator and the transition rate S of PP prime. And we talked a lot about how you calculate S of PP prime for different scattering mechanisms. So that would give us the tau F that we put in the Boltzmann equation. It would also give us the mean free path that we put in the Landauer approach. All right, so okay. So we've accomplished a lot. You know, what's left to do? So one of the big challenges now is that we stayed near equilibrium. Most devices are very far from equilibrium. You apply a volt across a small MOSFET, you're a long ways from equilibrium. Relaxation time approximation doesn't work so well. You know, carriers are very energetic. There's lots of scattering. And we have to figure out how to handle that. So one of the ways is just to solve the Boltzmann equation. So we know the Boltzmann equation. We know how to describe all of the scattering in detail. We write down the boundary conditions. We solve it. That's sometimes done. We're going to talk about the Monte Carlo technique, which is the most common technique for solving that directly. So you can do that, but you'd like to have some simpler ways also so that you can kind of get some feeling as to what should happen or do some analytical calculations. And what we typically are after is not a full solution to the Boltzmann equation, but there are things like you want to know the carrier density, you want to know the current density, you might want to know the average energy per particle. You want a few key quantities. Those quantities are all moments of the distribution. So we take F, so assume we've solved the Boltzmann equation, we know F. We take some function of momentum, and then we do an integral, and we integrate out momentum. So we get quantities that are position and time dependent. So for example, if I want to know the current density, and I solve the Boltzmann equation, I just multiply the F by minus Q times the velocity for each state, times the probability that the state is occupied, and I just do the integral. And that gives me the electron current density as a function of position and time. Right? That's usually something that we want. So the question that arises then is, well, why do we have to go through all of this work to solve the Boltzmann equation when we don't want that much detail typically? Why don't we just solve for the quantities that we want directly? And maybe that'll be easier. And that's the idea behind this balance equation approach. You try to solve for the quantities that you're interested in without directly solving the Boltzmann equation. So I've got three lectures, I guess, on this. So we're going to get started today, and we sort of see how it works. So we're going to formulate a balance equation. And a balance equation is like a bookkeeping equation. And you know, you're familiar with these. Like, you're familiar with the continuity equations for electrons and holes. So you've got a dp dt is minus divergence of the hole flux plus the generation rate for holes minus the recombination rate for holes. And all that is a, you know, it's a simple bookkeeping equation. So there's an easy way to see it. Let's say I have a lake here. That's what this blue thing is. And P represents the water level of the lake. Right? So dp dt is the water level increasing or decreasing. Right? Well, if I've got a river that's flowing in, it's going to raise the water level. But the river flows out. If it flows out faster than it flows in, then the water level will go down. Right? So what's important is inflow minus outflow. If inflow minus outflow is positive, then the water level will increase. So divergence of a flux is a net outflow. Minus divergence is a net inflow. So when I look at that continuity equation and think of the P as the water level, the minus divergence of the hole flux just represents the net flow of holes into that region. All right. Now then I might be generating the quantity. So I got a cloud that comes over and it rains. That raises the water level. That's like the generation rate G. If I've got light shining on a semiconductor and I'm generating holes, or impact ionization, or some process. Okay. But it might be really hot and dry and the lake might evaporate. Oh, that's something like recombination. So the water level will go down. So that's like minus R. So it's very physical. Any physical quantity, I should be able to write an equation like this. It just says nothing can appear or disappear magically. I have to account for everything. That's all it says. So if I'm interested in things like current density, carrier density, energy density, heat flux, any physical quantity, I can write an equation like that. And if I solve that, then I have the answer. Okay, so that's what we want to do. We want to take a physical quantity, and there are always things like this, some kind of moment of the Boltzmann equation. So let's work in 1D. So the electron density per unit length, I would just do a sum like this. F is the probability that each state is occupied. The current density, I just weight F by minus Q times the velocity. Energy density, I just weight F by the kinetic energy of each state, do the sum. So any quantity, I think any quantity that you're interested in, you can always write it as some function of momentum times F and do the integral. And let's see. Now you've seen here, the function for the carrier density was 1, for the current density was minus Q times velocity, which depends on P or H bar K. Energy, E depends on P through the EK relation. So I just pick a phi and I compute the quantity, the physical quantity that I'm interested in. And then I can write a continuity equation, and it's going to look just like my continuity equation for holes. The net rate of increase of the quantity is going to be equal to minus the divergence of the flux of that quantity. That represents the rate at which the quantity is flowing into the region, plus the generation rate of that quantity, whatever it is, minus the recombination rate of that quantity. Right? So it should look like that. So our goal is to derive that equation from the Boltzmann equation. We know what the answer should look like. We just have to derive it for any physical quantity. All right, so you know, here we're just making the point that we pick a phi, we get the appropriate quantity, and then we have the balance equation. And there are some other things that we have to talk about now. Like if I pick a phi such that I'm interested in the energy density, what's the flux of the energy density? To figure out what that is. What's the generation rate of the energy density? What's the recombination rate of the energy density? We'll have to figure out what those quantities mean. Okay, but the way you do it is we just start with the Boltzmann equation. And instead of solving this and then taking the moments and getting all the quantities, we're first going to take the moments and then get equations for the quantities. And then we'll solve those equations. So notice here, we don't have to do this, but on the right-hand side, I've got the collision operator times F. Okay, I don't have any explicit generation or recombination of particles. We could put those in, but I would need to describe some microscopic process, some optical excitation creating electrons, some recombination through Shockley-Reed-Hall centers. Right? That would be specific to whatever process I was worried about. We're not going to have any of those. There'll be no recombination of particles. There'll be no generation of particles. If we have to put those in for a specific problem, we can come back and add one more term and put those in. Now, so that'll be kind of interesting. There will be no recombination or generation of particles, but in general, there will be recombination or generation terms in our balance equation. Because we can generate energy density with an electric field, even though we don't generate particles. We can give them more energy, things like that. Okay, so I'll do it in 1D. I think the homework for today is to do it in 3D. Multiply every term by some function of momentum. And then sum. And then we should have our balance equation. That's all we have to do. Okay, so we've got this long-looking equation with three terms on the left-hand side and one on the right-hand side. And we just have to go through each of those four terms one by one and see what we have. Okay, so the first term in that blue rectangle there, if we just look at that, the quantities that we're going to talk about, you know, we had examples of them. Phi was 1, it was minus Q times velocity. It didn't include any explicit time dependence. It wasn't changing with time. It was just some function of momentum. So I can pull that time derivative out of the sum, stick it in front. And then if I look at what's inside the sum, that's just my definition of the quantity that I'm trying to compute. Phi times F integrated over all momentum. So this first term here, it's easy to see, is just the time derivative of the quantity that I'm trying to find, whatever that is. All right. So we've got the first of these four terms in our balance equation, and it's, you know, it's the term we expected to get. Okay, let's look at the second term. This one involves the spatial gradient. Okay. Now, when I look at this spatial gradient, remember again, I multiplied by functions of momentum. You know, we have six independent variables, x, y, z, px, py, pz. Okay. momentum is not space dependent. These are independent variables. The phi is not space dependent. So I can just move the spatial derivative outside of the sum. And then let's take a look at what I have inside the curly brackets. I have a velocity times an f. If I just sum that up, I would get a flux. I would get a particle flux. But I'm weighting that flux by this quantity that I'm interested in. So that's the definition, f sub phi. That's a current or a flux associated with the quantity that I'm trying to compute. We just take the quantity, we multiply it by the velocity, weight it by the probability that the state is occupied, and sum them all up. Okay, so we've got our definition of what the associated flux is. When we're doing a continuity equation for electrons, it's obvious that the flux is going to be the electron flux. When we do a continuity equation for the current, what is the flux of the current? Right? That's not quite as obvious. Right? Maybe just put it in here and we'll find out what it is. Okay, so we have the third term. And this one takes just a little bit more work than the other ones, but not a whole lot. So this one involves the electric field. All right. Now, the electric field is not momentum dependent, so I wouldn't have to worry. I could take the derivative of the momentum out in front, and I wouldn't have to worry about that. But phi is momentum dependent. So if I'm going to move around that derivative the way I did before, I have to be careful. So what I'm doing over here on the right-hand side, the first term, I'm trying to take the derivative of the quantity phi times f. But if you do that and do it with the chain rule, we'll get an extra term. We'll get a d phi dpx times f that's not supposed to be there, right? So the second term inside those curly brackets just subtracts that extra term out. Then what I've got inside the curly brackets is identical to what's on the left-hand side. Basically, I'm just integrating by parts here, but... Okay, now, if you look at that first term, why do this? It's because if you look at that first term, we can argue that it's zero. And the way we can do that is, if you look at that, we're integrating this quantity phi times f. And if we're not too close to the edge of the Brillouin zone, we can let the limits go to plus and minus infinity. The Fermi function drops to zero exponentially at high energies. And I'm always multiplying some polynomial, right? It's always phi is 1, it's p squared over 2m for energy. And the f is going to drop exponentially, so it's going to go to 0 at both limits. Okay. If I have to worry about the zone boundary, it'll be identical at both sides, and I'll subtract them out, and I'll get 0. So that term integrates to 0, and I'm just left with the second term. And that second term now, the minus 1 over L sum over P d phi dpx times F, I'm going to call that the generation rate associated with the quantity. And I'm going to argue that it makes sense to call that the generation rate. And let's see why that makes sense. Okay, so we've just done some math on that third term in the Boltzmann equation. And we end up with this, and we say, ah, obviously, that looks like a generation rate. It's not so obvious yet. But if I would think of this, if I'm trying to generate the quantity phi, then it's sort of like the time derivative of the quantity times f. But phi didn't have any explicit time dependence in it, remember? Phi was like p squared over 2m for energy. Doesn't depend on time explicitly. But the electric field is going to accelerate p, so all of the p's will get bigger. So p squared over 2m will end up increasing. So if I were going to write that, I could write that as d phi dpx times dpx dt. Dpx dt depends on electric field. Right? The force dp dxt is just minus q times electric field. So the electric field increases the momentum. And therefore, if the quantity, say, is energy, its value is going to increase now because p squared over 2m on average is higher. So when I write it this way, I just take the dp dt outside of the curly brackets. That's constant. It's minus q times the electric field. And this is the term that we are calling the generation rate. So it's the electric field that is responsible for generating the quantities that we're interested in. It's because the electric field changes the momentum. If the momentum increases, it increases the quantity that we're talking about. We aren't creating or destroying particles. If we were, we would have another generation rate. But we've left those out of the Boltzmann equation. So what we call generation is the effect of the electric field. Right. So if we're in equilibrium and there's no net momentum, there'll be no net current flow, you apply an electric field, the electric field will change all of the P's and align them in one direction. It'll generate current. Right. It'll accelerate them. It'll generate energy. So the generation rate is related to the electric field. Okay. So let's see, we've done all of the terms on the left-hand side. Oops, I have a typo there. The first term is a dn phi dt, time dependence of the quantity we're interested in. The second term is the divergence of the associated flux, df dx. The third term is what we're calling the generation rate of the quantity due to the action of the electric field. And the fourth term has to do with collisions. And we haven't talked about that one yet. So this one gets a little more complicated, but you can sort of guess what it's going to look like, because in our continuity equation, there's only one term we haven't talked about, and that's recombination. Right? There is no explicit disappearance of any particles. We didn't put that in the Boltzmann equation. But we're still going to have a recombination term. And it's going to be scattering is going to lead to recombination. So, for example, if I've got a current, I'm going to lose current because scattering will randomize momentum and cause the current to decrease, even though none of the particles have disappeared. If I emit photons, I'll lose energy. So scattering will cause me to lose energy. So scattering will act for us like a recombination term. Okay, so here are the three that we've computed so far, and we just have to figure out how to write that last one, the recombination term. Okay, so we know what the collision operator looks like. That's a sum over px prime. That's a sum over all the states that this electron at px can scatter to. Okay, but when I put this last term, I have another sum. I'm summing everything over px. We're integrating out the momentum. So it's a double sum. Okay. So the mathematics there, you know, it's all done in the text. You know, you carefully go through that. It's worth going through. I'm not going to go through that here. I'm just going to tell you what the answer is, because the answer is plausible. And the specific definitions, you can go to the text and work that out and see what it is. So remember when we did the relaxation time approximation, we said that a reasonable thing to do is to say that the effect of collisions is to give you a decay that is minus the deviation from equilibrium divided by some characteristic time. So that's df dt due to collisions. You have a deviation from equilibrium, you'll get a minus df dt to try to pull you back. And the characteristic time will be tau f. So, first of all, I should point out, we call that tau f a microscopic relaxation time, because there's a different one for every p. And we can compute that from s of pp prime doing the sum. We find out exactly what the relaxation time is for every electron in every k state. It's different for everyone. Okay. Now, I'm just going to write down the answer to what's in the book. it would be plausible to say that the effect of collisions is similar. If we have some deviation in whatever quantity we're interested in, that deviation will be n phi minus n phi in equilibrium. We'll be away from equilibrium. The effect of collisions will be to try to pull you back. So it should be the deviation from equilibrium divided by some characteristic time. And the characteristic time is the relaxation time for the quantity that we're interested in. It's a momentum relaxation time, or an energy relaxation time, or an energy flux relaxation time, or a heat flux relaxation time, or a temperature relaxation time, whatever quantity we're trying to get a handle on. So you could just think, you want to know what is that? You could just think of this as a definition. You know, what precisely, how do you do that average tau? What exactly is that? Well, one way to do that is to return here to slide 18 and look at that equation there. Just equate that to minus n equilibrium divided by a characteristic time. That tells you what the characteristic time is. In general, it's pretty complicated. In fact, this is where, in the balance equation approaches, there are many assumptions involved, and some of the biggest ones come when you just try to do something plausible for this characteristic time rather than rigorously computing it. All right. So this is the last term. Our recombination, it's a negative term. That means it's decreasing the quantity. So that's a recombination rate. So we're just going to define our recombination rate to be the deviation of the quantity from its equilibrium value divided by the characteristic time associated with that quantity. If the quantity is momentum, it's the momentum relaxation time. That's what it is. Now, that is called a macroscopic. You hear this literature, these terms, so just so you know what you're hearing. When people say they're using a macroscopic relaxation time approximation, this is what they mean. They're solving a moment of the Boltzmann equation, and this is now an average time for all of the electrons. When you do a relaxation time approximation for the Boltzmann equation, you have a different one for every P. All right, they look similar, but they're slightly different. Okay, so we've got the equation. It's got a simple physical interpretation. We know now, given given a phi, we can compute an n phi. We know how to compute the flux that's associated with that quantity, f phi. We know how to compute the generation rate. We have a prescription. We know how to compute the recombination rate. So we can set up a bookkeeping equation for any quantity that we're interested in, and then just solve it, and we have the quantity. Okay, so here's a summary. We put it all together. All we have to do now is to sit down and solve it. Okay, so before I continue, pause. Everybody with me? Any questions? So you might suspect that this is too easy. I told you solving the Boltzmann equation is really hard. And now we're trying to bypass all of that and just solve for the things we're interested in. Obviously, we're going to have to make some approximations. It's not going to be that easy, right? In principle, you have to solve the Boltzmann equation. Yes?
The relation between generation time and the electric field is not very intuitive. Talk about continuity equation. Electric field comes in the divergence term, right? At the current term, divergence of flux. In flux, electric field comes. But here, in this derivation, this electric field is coming in generation term.
The flux, the way we've defined flux, you see here. The flux makes perfect sense. There should be no electric field in the way we've defined flux. In principle, you've solved for the F. That the electric field has given you some F because you solved the Boltzmann equation for that, right? Each K state has some velocity. Now you weight it by whatever quantity you're trying to compute the sum, that's the flux. There really should be no electric field in that. The electric field is coming in this generation rate. right? Because that's increasing this quantity phi.
So you'll see how, you know, let's work out a couple of examples and see how this comes out. So I'm going to do two balance equations today, if we have time. And then we'll do one or two more on Monday. So let's let phi equal one. So you can see that what we're going to get is the electron density. We're going to get a continuity equation for the electrons. So you shouldn't expect anything surprising. There actually is one little gotcha you have to be careful about. So the quantity is just the electron density that we're trying to get a balance equation for. And we know the answer. It's got to be the continuity equation, right? We'll just make sure that that's what happens. What's the associated flux? Well, we can recognize that, you know, put PP equal 1, that's just the electron flux. So it's the electron current in one dimension divided by minus Q. What's the generation rate due to the electric field? Well, the electric field isn't generating particles. It's just moving them around and accelerating them. So there should be no generation rate because that describes the effect of the electric field on the number of particles, on the amount of the quantity. And the quantity here is the number of particles. So we just take our prescription. Phi is 1. You take its derivative, it's 0. So the generation rate is 0, just the way it's supposed to be. Now you look at the recombination rate. The recombination rate we've written as it's the deviation of the quantity from its equilibrium value divided by some characteristic time. So it's the electron density minus its equilibrium value divided by a characteristic time, which you would, right? Now forget that that's zero there. We're going to talk about that in a minute. So far, that sort of looks plausible, right? You know what a minority carrier diffusion equation looks like. That looks like Shockley-Reed-Hall recombination in low-level injection. Okay. But it shouldn't be there. We didn't put any Shockley-Reed-Hall recombination in the Boltzmann equation. We didn't put any low-level injection assumption in. This should not be there. Right? Now, the reason it's there is that I haven't been very careful. If you go back, remember I skipped over the actual derivation of that characteristic time. If you go back to the book and look at how we do that properly, you'll see that that time is actually infinity in this particular case. Right? You know physically it's not supposed to be there. If you go back and just look at its mathematical prescription in terms of S of PP prime and stuff, you'll see that it's not there. Right? So it has to be zero, just because we haven't put any electron recombination in. Okay, so this is our zeroth moment because phi is p to the zero. And our general balance equation has given us the continuity equation for electrons, just like it's supposed to. No surprises. We didn't need all of this machinery to do that, right? And there's no recombination generation terms just because we haven't put them in. Okay, the current equation is a little more interesting. So we should get a continuity equation for current. Now, you never talk about that in 606, right? You talk about a continuity equation for electrons. And that continuity equation involves a current, just like you see this I here on slide 24. And then you take your drift diffusion equation and you stick it in for I. Okay. Yes?
We assume that the generation term is essentially a response to the electric field, which current quantity of interest shows as So is this related to the Poisson equation, or we are not
talking about it? Well, yeah, in general, when you're talking about electronic devices, there is also a Poisson equation, right? So you have to solve these equations self-consistently with the Poisson equation. Yeah, that's a separate issue. The electric field that we're talking about here comes out of a solution to the Poisson equation. So, you know, the basic semiconductor equations are the Poisson equation, the electron continuity equation, the hole continuity equation. And in general, you have to solve all of those simultaneously. So we're just talking about the transport part of it. In general, you have to couple that self-consistently into a Poisson.
All right, so let's do the current equation. You know, I mean, we write, you know, you're used to seeing electron continuity equations. You've probably, before this class, you probably haven't seen a current, a continuity equation for the current. But you can do it. We can do a continuity equation for any quantity. So let's do it. I'll do it the way people usually do it. They usually, first of all, write a continuity equation for momentum. Momentum is mass times average velocity. Current is charge times carrier density times average velocity. So the two are very closely related. The momentum balance equation is P to the first power, so we call that the first moment. So let me get a balance equation for the momentum first, and then we'll just convert it to current. It's easy to do. All right, if I multiply this by minus Q and divide it by effective mass, my phi would give me the current right away. But people talk about a momentum balance equation and a momentum relaxation time, so let's do the momentum balance equation. So our quantity of interest, our phi is going to be the momentum of every state. Our total quantity is just the total momentum density, capital P. So it's the momentum per unit volume, or I could write it, or per unit length, since I'm in 1D. So it's the electron density per unit length times the average value of the momentum per electron. Right. All right. Now, don't remember, you know, we're working in 1D here. X and PX are independent variables. Every state, you know, is located at some position and has some momentum. But I could talk about the average momentum of all of the electrons. That's what the average PX is. Okay, so what's the flux? So we simply take PX, our quantity, we multiply it by the velocity, and that gives us the flux. So we have to sum the quantity PX VX. We have to weight that by F and sum that. That's our associated flux. Okay. So I'm going to call that 2W. W we frequently use for kinetic energy. And I'm going to define the associated flux. The flux associated with momentum. Momentum has a direction, so it's already a flux. So this is like a flux of a flux. Is 2W. So that's NL times the You can see in that sum, if I divided that sum by a sum over F, I would have the average value of PX times VX. I didn't normalize that sum. So this quantity that I'm calling 2W is N times the average value of PX VX. All right. Now, PX VX, PX is like M times V. So W is really carrier density times 1/2, the average value of 1/2 mvx squared. 1/2 mvx squared is the average kinetic energy per electron. So W is the total kinetic energy density. It's the number of electrons per unit length times their average energy. That's what. Okay, so we have the quantity. Phi is little px. The quantity itself is the total momentum density of the whole group of electrons. The associated flux is the electron density times px vx. The recombination rate, so we'll just write this down. The recombination rate is supposed to be the deviation of the quantity from its equilibrium value. In equilibrium, there's no net flow of momentum in any direction. So the average value has to be zero. There's just as much plus PX as there is minus PX. So the recombination rate is just the total momentum density divided by momentum relaxation time. What about the generation rate? The electric field is trying to align all of the carriers with the electric field, or anti-align them because the force is minus Q. It's trying to push them all in one direction. So it's trying to take the ones that are pointing in the minus X direction, say, and flipping them around to plus X. So the electric field is generating a net momentum opposite to the direction of the electric field because of its force. So there should be a generation rate. I just take the derivative of P with respect to P, and that's 1. So the generation rate due to the electric field is just minus Q times the electron density times the electric field. I should be generating momentum with the electric field, right? It's, if they're all start out randomly, the electric field just aligns them all. So if I put everything together, we've got a balance equation for the momentum density. All right. But that's not really what we want. Oh, the characteristic time now is the momentum relaxation time. People usually do it this way. They usually talk about a momentum relaxation time, not a current relaxation time. That's what we call the momentum balance equation. But what we really want is a current equation. So if I have parabolic bands, it actually gets a little more difficult and a little more interesting if the bands aren't parabolic. But let's say I have parabolic bands, then P is M times V, M star. So I can take the M star out, and the momentum density is just the number of electrons times the effective mass times the average velocity per electron. The current density is the charge on an electron times the number of electrons times their average velocity. So these two are closely related. I can just take minus Q divided by M times the momentum density, and I have the current that I'm after. I could have done that right at the beginning if I wanted to. Right? That means this momentum balance equation becomes a current equation. And the current equation looks like this. And let's see, what I want to do is to solve for the current Ix on the right-hand side. So I'll bring that over to the left-hand side. I'll multiply through by the average momentum relaxation time. And I get a current equation that doesn't quite look like a drift diffusion equation. But this is the current equation that we get. And I can see some terms there now that it's tempting to collect. I see a Q average tau over M. So we should call that mobility. And it means I can write my current equation this way. And I'm getting, it's beginning to look like a drift diffusion equation. But you'll notice that there's a couple of things. But first of all, you'll notice that on the left-hand side, there's a time derivative of the current. When you write down the drift diffusion equation, you're probably not used to seeing a time derivative in it of the current. But it's supposed to be there, right? This came right out of the Boltzmann equation. Now, if I assume my device is switching or whatever it's doing, but if I assume that it is switching slowly in a time scale compared to the momentum relaxation time, then I can ignore this term. So there's some delta T in my switching event. If that delta T is much longer than the momentum relaxation time, this term is going to be small. And I can neglect it. You know, you estimate that time from the mobility. You know, it's typically less than a picosecond. So if I say what's 1/2 a picosecond, that's 2 terahertz. So if I have a device that's switching in less than 2 terahertz, I could probably go ahead and throw this term out. There are some conditions under which people keep this term, but frequently you throw it out. And in order to get the drift diffusion equation that we normally use, we normally assume that we're operating in this regime. The frequencies are not too high, so we can throw that term out. And that simplifies the equation. But it still doesn't look quite like a drift diffusion equation because I'm not used to seeing this W. W, remember, is the kinetic energy density. I have a drift term in the electric field that automatically came out, nq mu times the electric field. But I have a term that involves not the gradient of carrier density, but the gradient of kinetic energy density. That's just what naturally comes out of the Boltzmann equation. Okay, now, you know, we'll have to revisit this later. But, you know, for now, we know that W is 1/2 m times the average value of the velocity squared. Now, in equilibrium, I know that the average velocity squared is, you know, if I do this average over a Maxwellian, this is just the temperature. 1/2 mv² is the average kinetic energy. That's 1/2 kT. You worry about that. What if you do in high electric fields? You know, then you don't know what to do quite. But if I'm in near equilibrium, I can assume that that W is N times 1/2 KT. Okay. So if I do that, and if I assume that the temperature is constant, then when I do that derivative, I just get a dN dx times KT times mu, and if I define my diffusion coefficient to be KT over Q times mu, we've got our familiar drift diffusion equation. So you can kind of see what it takes to get a drift diffusion equation. We have to assume that we're operating at a low frequency so we can get rid of that time derivative. We had to assume that we're near equilibrium so that we knew what to do with that W. We had to assume that the temperature was constant. All right, now you could put a temperature gradient in. So when I do this, I could just say, okay, let's let the temperature be position dependent. Then when I take a dW dx, I'll just pick up another term. Okay. So when I do that, I have a derivative ddx of n times kt. All right. So now I have to be a little bit careful when I do this. Because what's n? I mean, n is something like an effective density of states times e to the quasi-Fermi level minus bottom of the band over kT. And it depends on temperature. And it depends on temperature both in the exponential and in the effective density of states. So I have to be a little careful when I do this derivative. When I do this derivative, I'll get three terms. The first term, I'll just get a kT times dN dx. That gives me the diffusion term that we got before. The last term, I just take N times K and I take a dT dx. That's going to give me a thermoelectric effect. But I have to be careful to take a dN dt times dT dx because it depends on temperature and temperature depends on X. And if you do all of those three terms, and if you use the expression for n, then I'll show you the result. It's just a little bit of algebra. You get something that looks like this. The first term there is going to give us q times the diffusion coefficient times the gradient of n. And the second term looks like a thermoelectric effect, something like what we've seen before. Okay. So if I lump those all together, my drift diffusion equation gives me a drift term, a diffusion term, and a term involving the thermal gradient. I'll lump those terms, everything together in something that's sometimes called a Soré coefficient, S sub t. And we've got expressions for everything there. All right. By the way, you know, my book is 9 years old. I'm still finding errors. Note that I wasn't careful about that derivative in my book. So please take a note of that. All right, now let's see if we can relate that to the Seebeck coefficient. You know, we've done thermoelectric effects before, and now we're doing them with a different approach. So if I take this current equation, normally when we do Seebeck coefficient, I've got an N-type slab where there's no concentration gradient. So let me assume that there's no concentration gradient. Let me solve for the electric field, and then we find, you know, what's the open circuit voltage across this. You solve for the electric field, you can do it straightforward. The coefficient in front of dt dx, in this form, the way we wrote it before, it's supposed to be Seebeck coefficient times dt dx. So the Seebeck coefficient is apparently this Soré coefficient divided by nq mu. All right, so we conclude that the Seebeck coefficient is k over minus q times 2 minus eta f. Remember, eta f is ef minus bottom of the band in units of kt. Okay. Now, if you look back in lecture 8 when we did this before, we got the Seebeck coefficient in 1D, and this is the expression that we got for it. And you can see, you know, we're missing something here. We're doing things a little cruder. R is the characteristic exponent for the energy-dependent microscopic relaxation time or microscopic diffusion length. We're just lumping everything into some macroscopic quantity, and we hadn't really resolved the energy dependence. You can see that if R is 1, if the characteristic exponent is 1, I would get the same answer. You know? But I've got no way in this expression to say, well, what if ionized impurity scattering, or what if acoustic phonon scattering? So I'm getting results that are similar, but they're based on slightly different assumptions, so I get slightly different results. Okay, so we better wrap up. So what we did is we took the Boltzmann equation, we converted it into a set of moment equations, we discussed the zeroth moment, that's the electron continuity equation. When we did the zeroth moment, that gave us a current. So we said, no problem, we'll just write a current equation. The current equation gave us a W, a kinetic energy density. Now, I just stopped here and said, okay, we're near equilibrium, W is N times KT over 2. But what if we're not near equilibrium, right? Now we've got a quantity W that we don't know what to do. We need an equation for W. No problem. You know, I can go ahead and I can write a balance equation for that. But when I write a balance equation for that, it'll involve something else that I don't know. And I'll say, no problem, I'll just write a balance equation for that. And that'll involve something else that I don't know. So there's an infinite hierarchy here, and you have to figure out how to stop. Now, the way we stopped is we just said that, well, the average energy per carrier is 1/2 kT. And I'll guess that I know what kT is. You know, but in general, you know, if I'm near equilibrium, the electron temperature is the lattice temperature. But what if I'm not near equilibrium? That would be called a hot carrier effect, right? Then I have to write the next equation. And then I'll have a problem. The next equation will involve the fourth equation, and I'll have to figure out what to do with that. So that's where we'll continue the discussion on Monday.